Lectionary Lab Live is recorded by Two Bubbas and a Bible. We're glad that you're tuning in.
Well, hello, everybody. Well, this is not John Fairless. This is Delmer Chilton. And my Bubba, John Fairless, is just not able to talk. He's not even supposed to whisper. We have done this show, I think it's running about 175 times or so, and this is a unique situation in which you're just going to have to listen to me, and John is taping and recording, and he's going to get to show up. So say hey, everybody. Hey, everybody. I wanted to make sure you got that part. This is the 26th Sunday after Pentecost, November 13th in the season after Pentecost. And it's also, as we record this, it is Election Day. And so all prayers for all of us as we think about what this momentous day is about. And it's an interesting lead into the text for the day, because the major themes we're dealing with are kind of apocalyptic. And a lot of the language from both sides of the political issue have been, you know, whatever happens today, it's going to be the end of the world. So let's take a little time to look at the text and see what's going on. By the way, on the instant messaging, John says, hey, everybody. So John says, hey. We're going to work with Malachi chapter 4. We're going to work with Psalm 98, 2 Thessalonians 3, 6 through 13, and Luke chapter 21, 5 through 19, the little apocalypse. So I'm going to start with just talking about a few themes, and then I'm going to work from Luke through Malachi and Psalms, and then end up talking a little bit about Thessalonians. So here we go. A lot of the themes we're working with today have to do with apocalyptic vision. Malachi, you know, starts right off with the day is coming, burning like an oven. You have the psalm, which sounds really good, and until you realize it's a victory song after a military victory, and it ends with the line, he's coming to judge the earth, so it fits in with that judgment. Then even Thessalonians, a lot of the idleness is built on people's expectation of Jesus coming back. So why work? Why do anything? He'll be here any minute. Why get busy? And then the gospel lesson is a reflection somewhat on the issues of knowing that the temple has already fallen. I'll get to that in a minute. But it's, you know, look at this wonderful temple. What if it falls? And Jesus' little apocalypse about things that'll happen and questions and all of those things. And how are we to live in the midst of this time? So here we go. Luke, as I said, the temple, by the time this is written, the temple had already been destroyed approximately 7 AD in the common era. And by the time Luke was written, this had already happened. But as it's written, of course, Jesus died before then. So there's this dialogue. It's not to say that Jesus didn't say this, but the readers who read this text will know that the temple's already been destroyed. So either Jesus predicted it and it happened, or it's reflecting on what does the destruction of the temple mean and some things Jesus had to say. Either way, the topic comes up. Well, look at this beautiful temple, and what happens if it's destroyed? And Jesus says, you know, don't worry about that. Time's coming when that's going to be destroyed, but God is still God. That's kind of the point that he goes with. They're asking, well, what are the signs that are going to happen when the day of the Lord comes? And those kind of things take place. And what are the signs? And when is it going to happen? And Jesus' response is, well, here are some signs, things that we see all around us. You know, wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes and terrible things happening. And he said, but before all of that happens, you'll be persecuted. You'll be arrested and all of these kind of things happen. This kind of seems to indicate that this was very much aware of the situation that early Christians were in particularly the reflection of the issue of persecution is reflected in the book of Acts, in which Paul continually is getting in trouble with various folks and getting hauled before the civil authorities. And this is happening partially because they are a group that nobody quite understands. They are not a group that they're a group that's unwilling to find any way in which they can be worshipers within the context of the civil religion of the Roman Empire. So they're continually being drawn before. And so Luke takes this issue of the temple collapsing and issues of when is the day of coming, which is reflected in the Old Testament scriptures I'll come to in a minute, or the Hebrew scriptures I'll come to in a minute. And he works it into how does one hold on in the midst of a difficult time? How does one persist in persecution? And Jesus' basic answer here is, don't worry, I got this. That is to say, yeah, a lot of things are going to happen before the day of coming, and you'll see all these signs, these bad things happening. And so, one, this is a reminder to us that just because you're a Christian doesn't mean all your plans are going to work out and the world is going to become a rosy and wonderful place. This is the promise we all get from a variety of levels of Christianity, and that's just not sourced, as I would say, in the scriptures. It is, if you look at it, we're asked to be disciples, to give up wealth, to give up something into family relationships at times, and that you're going to have to take up a cross. What did we think that meant? A nice silvery gold one around our neck? No, it means a burden of discipleship and of following. And he says, this will get difficult, and you will sometimes be called upon to respond as to why do you have this faith? And the promise is that the Spirit will be with us through whatever we suffer. Jesus says, I've got this. You're going to be fine. Endurance, perseverance, stay in the course. Is that what you're called to? That's the way in which Jesus responds to these questions of anxiety of what happens in the absence of our Lord and Savior, who has gone and resurrected and ascended, as we go through life wondering how we're going to survive. And the promise of the second coming for Jesus is, I'll be present there with you, whatever happens. I got this. I was interested today, as I was planning worship for this coming Sunday, to look over the prayer of the day for the Lutheran Church for this coming Sunday for these texts. And I want to just do a little excerpt from it. It says, may we live through what is temporary without losing what is eternal. Prayer of the day. May we live through what is temporary without losing what is eternal. It seems to sum up what Jesus is trying to tell us in this gospel lesson. We get too focused on the troubles of the day, we can lose focus on God's presence with us throughout. Well, moving over to Malachi, Malachi is not a name, it's a title. Malachi means my messenger, and it's an interesting book, through the book of Malachi. It consists almost totally of dialogues between the God and the messenger, and between the messenger and the people. And there are three basic concerns that flow throughout the book of Malachi. One is kind of a priestly concern. The temple has been rebuilt. This is after the post-exilic time, but before the time of Ezra, probably around 500 BC. And it's concerned with proper ritual. How is it appropriate to worship? But a second concern in there is issues of justice. And a third concern that comes throughout is the coming day of the Lord. And today, that which precedes our text has to do with people asking questions about why do the evil flourish? Why do evildoers get by? Why do bad people get along well? And, this goes all the way to this question about Jonah. Why is there a one-for-one relationship between righteousness and human prosperity? And Malachi, again, this is a very short text, and the basic answer here is the day is coming, burning like an oven, and that God, there is this coming day of the Lord when everything will be set right. We have to be careful that we don't turn this into a, Well, they'll get theirs. I just have to get by, pie in the sky by and by. They'll get theirs. I remember growing up with in a community in which the second coming was a much more prominent issue of proclamation and a much more prominent concern as they talked about ways in which they saw the second coming and the tribulation and, you know, all that kind of thing. And it was almost as though, yeah, don't worry about those people over there. And it was usually the big church in town and the rich church in town. And, you know that who they are and all that kind of thing. But when Jesus comes, they'll know that we're the good people and they'll get theirs. That is really not, I think, the message we need to get here as a us them. The question is, life is difficult and messy and it's not evened out. And it's hard to tell who's who, and we need to rely on God to sort that out, to know everybody's heart. We need to be concerned about ourselves and obeying our understanding of the law and obeying God and letting God take care of things. May we live through what is temporary, including the evil of others, without losing what is eternal. Holding on to our relationship with God. Psalm 98, as I said, is a beautiful psalm. And we love to sing this psalm. We need to say, oh, sing to the Lord a new song, for he's done marvelous things. We have a hymn in the ELCA hymnal based on this. And it's beautiful. But then sometimes get taken aback when people realize that it's a song of victory after a war. So the other imagery is, men and women and children leaping for joy and gathering plunder. God has given them the victory, and we can get judgmental about that. And one of the things that helps me remember that it's just human is the picture at the end of World War II, in which you see the picture of the sailor kissing the woman on Main Street, I guess, Wall Street, some street in New York. It's an iconic picture on the cover of Life. And the celebration, the ticker tape parades, we all celebrate the end of war, and particularly if we won. And there is a good side to that. I mean, when people went to the churches and prayed a prayer of thanks that we had the victory and we did not succumb to evil. So we have to be careful about that, but we have to recognize it's a part of that whole understanding that we put our trust in God to set things right. As Martin Luther King Jr. said, the arc of history is long, but it bends toward justice. That is the orientation of that day. Lastly, just a couple of words about 2 Thessalonians. You can read it without any sense of the eschatological expectations, and it can get kind of judgmental. And there's some questions here that this makes it a difficult text for some of us modern Christians, particularly those of us in the mainline traditions, where the whole tension between the language about shunning and separation, you know, keep away from believers who are living in idleness, and et cetera. And that tension between our tendency toward inclusivity and acceptance. There's a sense of policing people's private lives that's just not a part of our lived experience of Christianity. We don't do that. We say the doors are open, y'all come, and it's a different environment. So it could make it a little difficult for us, and in particular, this is not kind of economic advice, you know, that should be incorporated into some kind of public policy about welfare and workfare. And if people won't work, neither let them eat. Well, if they're not, you know, and all of that, I mean, those are decisions that are complex, but this is not a bolstering for that. I think Paul's, the writer's major point here has to do with the eschatological expectation, which led people to check out of life. And to say, you know, the second coming is coming. There's no need for me to do anything. And the concern here was that really we need to continue with life. We need to continue living each day because we don't know when that'll happen. And, you know, the delayed return is pretty evident now in the 21st century of the common era. So we're not, this is not as big an anxiety for us as to think that, but there have occasionally, there are people who have over the years said, well, you know, why worry, you know, it's all going to be at the end. I think what's here for us has more to do with thinking about what is important for us as Christians. If it's not about getting the biggest car, the biggest houses, and making the most money, if we're not in that rat race, but we also don't want to be doing nothing toward providing for ourselves, what is that balance? And I think this might be a place to explore a kind of balance that says there is value in work, there's value in being part of a productive member of society, but what is that for? And that is for elevating others out of their poverty. What we do is a part of a community, and we are all to be able to be a part of that community and work together as a part of that, as a part of our life together as people of God. So that's all I got today, and it's been odd doing this without the dialogue partner. I think it's always helpful, and you push me in good directions, John, that I'm just not there for right at the minute. But thank you, and Delmer, tell everybody bye. Well, everybody bye.
And I'm about to introduce is a rare talent. He not only sings, he sings fine gospel, but he's a fantastic writer. His composition of My Tribute can be found in many of our modern-day hymnals. He's a Grammy Award winner four times over, a dynamic performer. Ladies and gentlemen, my special guest star, Andre Crouch.
I'm so glad for the very promise of the Lord. And whether you believe it or not, we can really say a song that I put together some time ago, but it says, soon and very soon, we're going to see the King. If you feel like clapping your hands, do so. It's okay.
Live again on the other other side.